Welcome to The Connection, where humans and aliens converse, and where all the dots are connected. I'm Nancy of Zeta Talk, an emissary for aliens from Zeta Reticuli. They are here to warn of great cataclysms on Earth and advise how to survive this. The pending pole shift is not the end. Man will make his next leap forward to live a better time when aliens will live among us. The Colburn has been called a parallel Bible. As for the Book of Enoch, found among the Dead Sea Scrolls, it was omitted from the Bible. The Colburn was protected by the Culleans, saved before the burning of the Glastonbury Monastery in Scotland, and thence made its way to New Zealand. Both the Book of Enoch and the Colburn include more specifics on past and future pole shifts. This begs the question, were these books omitted from the Bible because the Church wanted man unaware? Certainly, few believe the third secret of Fatima was about the pending assassination of a pope. The Colburn speaks about a passing planet causing a pole shift. They call this planet the Destroyer. It's known by many different names. The ancient Sumerians called this passing planet Nibiru. Zechariah Sitchin, who documented what the ancient Sumerians had to say, called it the 12th planet because the ancient Sumerians counted the sun and the moon as a planet. In the channeled book Oashbi, it's called the Red Star. The ancient Babylonians called it Marduk. And modern day, we call it Planet X, as it was sighted inbound in 1983 by the NASA and JPL infrared team. The Colburn is a massive book, formerly only available for about $120 with weeks of delay in being shipped from New Zealand, but recently has become more convenient because Marshall Masters of the Yowza site, Y-O-W-U-S-A, has provided it as an ebook for $4.95. It's over 1,000 pages long. So I recently came into possession of one of these ebooks and was astonished to find the detail and how closely what they're describing as having happened in the past during the flood and the Exodus and anticipated to happen in the future, how closely that matches what Zeta Talk has described for our coming pole shift. I was particularly interested in digging through the Colburn to establish a timeline. There are various pieces, like pieces of a puzzle, about the coming pole shift. There's going to be 3 days of darkness, says the Bible. There's going to be 6 days where the sun seems to rise in the west, according to Islamic literature. There's going to be a red dust making the rivers run blood red and lakes blood red. And the Zetas have talked about a rotation stoppage, which legends speak to the Indians on the west coast talking about the sun barely dawning and it's just freezing there, and people around the Middle East, around Egypt, describing the sun freezing overhead just after noon. But how much time? How does the 3 days of darkness happen and then months go by? We've had delayed progress, or it seems like delayed progress, of Planet X as it's rounding the sun. It arrived in the inner solar system in 2003, about the summer of 2003, and just creeping about the sun. Its tail pointed toward the sun so that we get some fireballs and debris and red dust, but mostly it's blowing away from us, and we can't really see Planet X because it's so shrouded by dust that it becomes a dim fuzzball as we look toward the sun. So how long is this going to go on? If we have this time waiting, between its arrival in 2003 and I'm speaking to you in 2005, just when does the 3 days of darkness happen? And are we going to go in for months and months of delay after that until we finally have rotation stoppage? Inquiring minds would like to know. The cauldron has given us excellent clues. Compare the sequence of events described in the cauldron to what's occurring today. Here's what the cauldron, on page 128, says about the flood. First, it infers that the red dust would be seen in the skies and the moon's orbit not right as an early warning. This was, in fact, the clue that Noah took that he should start building his ark. I quote, "They had knowledge of signs and omens, the secrets of the seasons, of the moon and the coming of the waters. There were wise men filled with the inner wisdom who read the book of heaven with understanding and knew the signs. Then the day came when the lady of the night changed her garment for one of a different hue, and her form swept more swiftly across the skies. Her tresses streamed out behind in gold and copper, and she rode in a chariot of fire. The hour of trial draws nigh. The shadow of doom approaches this land. Because you have not mingled with the wicked, you are set apart and shall not perish. Abandon your abode and possessions, for the hour of doom is at hand. Neither gold nor treasure can buy a reprieve." And this was from the cauldron, page 128, regarding the flood. So Noah took his clue from this, the moon moving more swiftly across the skies, and there seeming to be copper and gold in the atmosphere, which is early red dust. He began to build his ark using these clues. Apparently very closely in communication with what we might term angels or aliens. He must have been a contactee, a good man. The Bible and all books referring to Noah and the ark speak of him as being someone, a righteous person, living a good life and getting some information. Not unlike today, when many people are seem to have inner knowledge, our contactees perhaps, or into some psychic awareness of what is coming, and making plans to move themselves to safety and be better positioned for our coming pole shift. Noah's tales carry some interesting suggestions for those concerned about self-sufficiency. He was thinking about the waters go away. It's what I've got on my boat that I can reestablish a community. And here were his concerns, and here were his conclusions. And I quote from the cauldron. "It has been told to me in a dream that the ship should be built against the mountains, and the sea will come up to me. The lowermost was for the beasts and cattle and their provender, and it was laid over with sand from the river. The middle one was for birds and fowls, for plants of every kind that are good for man and beast, and the uppermost one was for the people. Cisterns of water and storehouses for food. The ship was without mast or oars. There were no poles and no openings, except for a hatch beneath the eaves, above where all things entered. Into the great ship they carried the seed of all living things. Grain was laid up in baskets, and many cattle and sheep were slain for meat, which was smoked by fire. They also took all kinds of beasts of the field and wild beasts, birds and fowls, all things that crawl. They said to the mockers, 'Have your hour, for ours will surely come.' Of all the people who entered with him, two understood the ways of the sun and moon and the ways of the year and seasons. One the quarrying of stones, one the making of bricks, and one the making of axes and weapons. One the playing of musical instruments, one bread, one the making of pottery, one the care of gardens, and one the carving of wood and stone. One the making of roofs, one the working of timbers, one the making of cheese and butter. One the growing of trees and plants, one the making of plows. One the weaving of cloth and making of dyes, and one the brewing of beer, one the felling and cutting of trees, one the making of chariots, one dancing, one the mysteries of the scribe, one the building of houses and the working of leather, There was one skilled in the working of cedar and willow wood, and he was a hunter, one who knew the cunning of game and surface. He was a watchman. There was an inspector of water and walls, a magistrate, and a captain of men. And this was from the Colburn regarding the flood, also page 128 or the pages following. Now, I note here, this seems like an awful lot of people because we were under the impression from the Bible that it was Noah and his family. But according to the Colburn, Noah was a wealthy or high-born person who had access to a lot of funds and virtually sunk his money into this survival community and was able to pick and choose from people as to who should join and who not. Another point to note is that he's not just grim about all this. We have dancing, we have musicians, we have good cooks. So he's aware that a community needs more than just food and shelter to survive. This is something the Vedas have also emphasized, saying that good cooks would be very held in great esteem, that can make the plain fare tasty. And singing and dancing, telling stories around the campfire, very important for keeping morale up. And I quote from Zeta Talk, How to Prepare. Regarding how mankind can prepare themselves, small cooperative groups operating in service to others, where the concerns of all are the concerns of each, will have the best chances. Most important is a cooperative attitude among the group, with a willingness to undertake distasteful tasks, a desire to share among all what little there may be, and a positive attitude toward the future. It is no small matter to have music, poetry, and art. This fills the heart of the musician, poet, or artist as much as it does the recipient. There will be much need for such distraction as the days will be dim and the nights dark and long. And this was from Zeta Talk, How to Prepare, written July 15, 1995. Then the pole shift, from Noah's point of view, is described. He describes a passing planet, very visible and frightening, dominating the sky, and a crust shift, and then the wave comes to carry his boat to the mountaintop, and I quote, Then with the dawning, men saw an awesome sight. There, riding on a great black cloud, came the destroyer, newly released from the confines of the sky vaults, and she raged about the heavens, for it was her day of judgment. The beast with her opened its mouth and belched forth fire and hot stones and a vile smoke. It covered the whole sky above, and the meeting place of heaven and earth could no longer be seen. In the evening the places of the stars were changed. They rolled across the sky to new stations. Then the floodwaters came. The floodgates of heaven were opened and the foundations of earth were broken apart. The surrounding waters poured over the land and broke upon the mountains. Storms and whirlwinds were loosened. There was a time of great heat, then came a time of bitter cold. The waves were over the waters did not rise and fall, but seethed and swirled. The stars in the heavens were loosened from their places, so they dashed about in confusion. There was a revolt on high. A new ruler appeared there and swept across the sky in majesty. The destroyer passed away into the fastness of heaven, and the great flood remained 7 days, diminishing day by day as the waters drained away to their place. End of the quote from the Colburn, page 128 and pages following. So, what have the Zetas said about the flood? They've described a displacement wave coming from the South Pole. Was caused by periodic pole shifts which move the poles under the equatorial sun, and sometimes the pole is not over land but is over water, such as our North Pole is today. They're saying that prior to the time of the flood, the pole shift prior to that, the South Pole was over water and moved only slightly toward the equatorial sun over warmer waters. This caused a large floating piece of ice, honeycombed from beneath, that was shattered and dropped into the water at the time of the pole shift or the passage that caused the flood. And this was a large displacement wave that came from the south, roaring across lands, And in the case of the Middle East, there was a tidal war that occurred because Africa, India, you know, Arabian lands, that narrows. So the water roaring up rose higher as it bore up into the Middle East, and that caused the significant rise in sea level that carried that boat up to a mountaintop. I quote from Zeta Talk, The Flood. The flood occurred in conjunction with the periodic visits of Planet X, which swings through the Earth's solar system, causing cataclysmic Earth changes such as pole shifts. The flood occurred three pole shifts back, approximately 11 millennia ago. The pole shift to that, prior to that, had been slight, so that melting of the poles was slow and incomplete. Ordinarily, each pole shift places the old poles in a position where they will quickly melt, facing the sun. The pole shift ahead of the one causing the flood only moved the old poles slightly, so much of the ice was still remaining. Poles over land have constant runoff when they melt and settle as the weight of ice presses down, but poles over oceans melt more from the bottom up, leaving caverns of ice honeycombed within as the water can support ice of odd shapes. Thus a vast body of thin ice stretched out over the southern ocean, over the location of the old pole. When the comet caused massive earth movements, this ice sheet fractured and fell into the water, causing a huge displacement and resulting massive wave. This wave was the flood of legend worldwide. Uneasy and being a highly service to other man, Noah gave the call and received visits from a spirit guide who responded. He did indeed construct a boat to save himself, his family, and household animals. The story of Noah has been romanticized to include all the animals of the earth, which doesn't take much logic to dispel. How big a boat was this? Where the wave was large, it did not cover the entire earth. How could it? End of the quote from Zeta Talk, The Flood, written in August 15, 1995. The flood was an immense tide, an exception, as during most pole shifts, there are flood tides, but not to that height. Zeta Talk has described this in Flood Tide, and I quote, "Tidal waves are often shown as rising high, a tower of water crashing down upon hapless humans standing in horror on a beach. It is rather a flood tide, as the oceans are climbing up out of their beds into higher ground, so the leading edge is the highest point of the wave. In tsunami, a single line of pressure moves through the oceans, transferring water pressure rapidly from the quake point to where it must stop, at land, thus finally crashing upon a beach. During a pole shift, there is no single line of pressure. The ocean as a whole is on the move because it stays behind while the crust moves, and thus rolls up on land onto the coastline being pulled under it. This is a flood tide, with the lip of the water being its highest point, rising like a silent tide endlessly on the rise, the wave rolling inland without it crashing back and forth, just a steady, progressive inundation. To those at the mercy of such a flood tide, their first thought is to climb above the tide. Soon they are standing at the highest point they can reach, and still the water, flowing inland steadily, rises. Afloat on a boat or flotsam, they will be dragged inland with the flow until a reverse slosh begins, the water flowing back into its bed, but in the nature of water during a slosh, overshooting this other side so that both sides of the ocean experience this flood tide, alternately, for some days until the momentum diminishes. When the flood tide recedes, those afloat are in danger of being dragged far out to sea with the flow, as the water will rush to its bed unevenly, more rapidly where it can recede the fastest." This was a quote from Flood Tide, written June 15, 2001. The Colburn also describes the Exodus, which was one pole shift back, the passage that occurred approximately 1600 B.C. Again, as with the flood, they report omens in the skies. In the case of the flood, it was the moon moving rapidly with gold and copper tresses behind it, in other words, red dust in the skies in the atmosphere. But the description during the time of the Exodus has a curious mention of women becoming barren. Now, what would cause this? They say it was the tension. Problems with diet, malnutrition can also cause women to fail to conceive or to abort. Very thin women will not conceive, for instance. And then they describe a time when red dust turned the water red and social disruption. And I quote from the Colburn, page 641. The dark days began with the last visitation of the destroyer, and they were foretold by strange omens in the skies. All men were silent and went about with pale faces. Fear walked the land, and women became barren with terror. They could not conceive, and those with child aborted. The days of stillness were followed by a time when the noise of trumpeting and shrilling was heard in the heavens, and the people became as frightened beasts without a headsman. The dead were no longer sacred and were thrown into the waters. He who grew no grain now owned a storehouse full. Cattle were left unattended to roam into strange pastures, and men ignored their marks and slew the beasts of their neighbors. No man owned anything. The public records were cast forth and destroyed, and no man knew who were slaves and who were masters. Plague was throughout the land. The river was bloody and blood was everywhere. Those who did drink from the river vomited it up. The dust tore wounds in the skin of man and beast. End of the quote from the Colburn, page 641. Here we have, in the social disruption, the hierarchy gone amiss. Now, in Egypt, they had a census. They had the slaves. The Jews were slaves and escaped during the Exodus, during that pole shift, approximately 1600 B.C. All this broke down. Sounds like the guards weren't attending to their duties. Soldiers weren't attending to their duties. There might have been a certain amount of insanity. Certainly the servants or the lower classes took advantage of the confusion to just walk into houses and take what they wanted. The rules were gone, and if that's the case, the enforcers of the rules and the laws were not in attendance. So it was chaos, social chaos. Continuing, the Colburn describes the planet of passage, Nibiru, or the destroyer, as the Colburn calls it, becoming visible from the direction of the sun. This is important to note because Zetatalk has stated that Planet X zoomed into the solar system from the direction of Orion mid-2003 and thence has been creeping around the sun, very close to the sun. And the reason we can't see it is that our orbit has halted encountering this monster in our orbit, although rotation of the Earth continues, and that we are caught in an eddy flow of things like solar wind or particle flows that come around the sides of Planet X, such that it's holding us in that eddy flow almost like in a pincher grip. So therefore, it does come from the direction of the sun as it comes toward us on its way. We are caught, and it flies over our head, creating a pole shift, tipping us in space as it passes. So here in the Book of the Colburn, they are describing this coming from the direction of the sun, a writhing red appearance with a lashing tail. And they also describe a time of darkness, something the Bible has predicted, 3 days of darkness. And again, I quote from the Colburn. The doom shape, called the destroyer in Egypt, was seen in all the lands thereabouts. In color, it was bright and fiery, in appearance changing and unstable. It twisted about itself like a coil. It was not a great comet or a lucent star, being more like a fiery body of flame. Its movements on high were slow. Below, it swirled in the manner of smoke, and it remained close to the sun, whose face it hid. There was a bloody redness about it, which changed as it passed along its course. It caused death and destruction in its rising and setting. It swept the earth with gray cinder rain and caused many plagues, hunger, and other evils. It bit the skin of men and beasts until they became mottled with sores. In the glow of the destroyer, the earth was filled with redness. The face of the land was battered and devastated by a hail of stones, which smashed down all that stood in the path of the torrent. They swept down in hot showers, and strange flowing fire ran along the ground in their wake. The fish of the river died. Worms, insects, and reptiles sprang up from the earth. The gloom of a long night spread a dark mantle of blackness, which extinguished every ray of light. None knew when it was day and when it was night, for the sun cast no shadow. The darkness was not the clean blackness of night, but a thick darkness in which the breath of men was stopped in their throats. Men gasped in a hot cloud of vapor, which enveloped all the land and snuffed out all lamps and fires. Ships were sucked away from their moorings and destroyed in great whirlpools. It was a time of undoing. End of the quote from the Colburn, page 641 and pages following. Well, they certainly describe a darkness. This is not yet the pole shift. This is not yet the time of the great earthquakes, as the crust is moving, and when it stops moving, as they always say, it's not the fall that hurts, it's when the fall stops and you hit the ground. It's not how fast a car is moving, it's when it hits a wall, stopping the motion, where the great shattering earthquakes happen. So they have not yet described earthquakes. They're describing a time of darkness and a lot of lashing of the tail, which has a lot of gravel in it as well as red dust. This lashing tail is no mere thing. It's an immense tail, capable of wrapping around the earth, per the Vedas. The tail has left evidence in the very red clay found in spots around the world. This is not a normal soil color for earth. I quote from Zeta Talk, Red Dust. There are portions of the earth that exhibit a red clay soil, Australia and the southeastern U.S., but this is not a native soil as much as an accumulation of deposits. Dust clouds, as anyone experiencing a sandstorm will attest, have a life of their own. The cloud itself exists because there is some kind of glue holding it together. The dust clings to the debris, which clings to the larger debris, such as the moons, and these cling to Planet X. There is more than gravity involved, and this is too simplistic an explanation, and more than magnetism through the iron ore is certainly more magnetically active than most dust clouds. A tail swirl, moving like a slow-moving tornado, approaches Earth, which has magnetic as well as gravity attraction. Thus, it is not simply a head-on hit, tail to Earth, as it is also a sideways hit from swirling matter. The tail can wrap all around the earth during such a lick. There is no part of the globe that does not report red dust, frankly. It is perhaps more extreme on those sides of the globe that will be facing the approach, but elsewhere is not exempt. This is from Zeta Talk, Red Dust, written January 11, 2003. The extreme dusting precedes the pole shift by days, at most, and occurs at the same time the earth's rotation stops. This rotation stoppage is due to the magnetic attraction that the Atlantic Rift presents. As freshly hardened lava, iron-rich, concentrated in a line running from Iceland to Antarctica, right down the North Atlantic to the South Atlantic, it presents a gripping point that can be grabbed by Planet X and held. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Long Day, Long Night. The dynamics in place, as Planet X approaches during the last few days before the coming pole shift, are such that rotation stops with a predictable part of the Earth facing the approaching Planet X, the mid-Atlantic Ocean off the eastern seaboard of the United States. This part of the globe is centered between land masses that are fairly neutral in magnetic polarization, but lines up over former lava flows from the renting apart of the continents, the mid-Atlantic Rift. The Pacific Trench does not carry the same appeal, as it lies deeper under the water and its characteristics differ in composition from the newer magma that has risen during continental drift. Magma bubbling up in the Pacific is more diffuse than magma bubbling up in the Atlantic, centered in the rift. Thus, the Atlantic lava beds are gripped, facing the sun, facing the approaching Planet X, coming up from the south along the rift and causing both Europe, the Americas, and Africa to be on the long day side of the earth. Rotation stops with the Atlantic Rift facing the approaching planet, which is coming nearly from under the sun, but not directly under, so Africa and Europe are turned a bit more toward the sun than the North American continent. Therefore, the long day described by Joshua and the long night described by the West Coast Indians. This was a quote from Zeta Talk, Long Day, Long Night, written February 15, 2002. As is typical of magnets being pressed toward each other, the larger magnet forces the smaller to move so they can share a combined field. This is the pole shift, the movement of the crust by at least a quarter turn described by the Zetas. And I quote from Zeta Talk, pole shift. The pole shift is therefore sudden, taking place in what seems to be minutes to humans involved in the drama, but which actually takes place during the better part of an hour. There are stages between which the human spectators in shock are numb. At first there is a vibration of sorts, a jiggling as the crust separates in various places from the core. Then there is a slide where the crust is dragged over minutes to a new location along with the core. During the slide, tidal waves move over the earth along the coastlines as the water is not attached and can move independently. The water tends to stay where it is, the crust moving under it essentially. When the core finds itself aligned, it churns about somewhat, settling, but the crust, more solid and in motion, proceeds on. This is in fact where mountain building and massive earthquakes occur, just as car crashes do their damage on the point of impact when motion must stop. Weak spots along the Earth's crustal plates give way. The Pacific Ocean will shorten and the Atlantic widen. Subducting plates will subduct greatly. Mountain building will occur greatly, primarily increasing in areas already undergoing mountain building. All told, the better part of an hour, but at certain stages, only minutes. Plants survive as they are rooted and their seeds are everywhere. The animals, including man, survive because they travel with the moving plates of the earth and experience no more severe a shock when the plates stop moving than they would during a Richter 9 earthquake. Where mountain building occurs when the plates stop moving, the stoppage is not simply a sudden jolt, like a car hitting a brick wall. All is in motion, and the stoppage is more like a car hitting a barrier of sand-filled plastic barrels, a series of small jolts coming in quick succession. This was a quote from Zeta Talk, Pole Shift, written July 15, 1995. Then the Book of the Colburn describes the passage causing a pole shift. They describe horrific earthquakes and volcanic eruptions, and also days where the rotation of the earth stops. This is something that prophecy and myth mention, that the rotation of the earth stops for a series of days before the shift. Again, I quote from the Colburn. The east was troubled and shook. The hills and mountains moved and rocked. The doom shape thundered sharply in the heavens and shot out bright lightnings. Then a voice like 10,000 trumpets was heard. The whole of the land moved and mountains melted. The sky itself roared like 10,000 lions in agony, and bright arrows of blood sped back and forth across its face. It is thus described in the old records, few of which remain. It is said that when it appears in the heavens above, earth splits open from the heat, like a nut roasting before the fire. The flames shoot up through the surface and leap about. The doom shape covered about a fifth part of the sky and sends writhing, snake-like fingers down to earth. Midday is no brighter than night. Come the day, surely will, and in accordance with his nature, man will be unprepared. The earth turned over as clay spun upon a potter's wheel. The craftsman left his task undone. The potter abandoned his wheel and the carpenter his tools. Men lost their senses and became mad. On the great night of the destroyer's wrath, when its terror was at its height, there was a hail of rocks. The habitations of men collapsed upon those inside. The temples and palaces of the nobles were thrown down from their foundations. Even the Great One, the firstborn of Pharaoh, died with the highborn in the midst of terror and falling stones. There were 9 days of darkness and upheaval, while a tempest raged such as was never been known before. End of the quote from the Colburn, page 641 and following on the Exodus. Well, here again, the earth turning round like on a potter's wheel has been described by the Zetas as the earth wobble. A serious wobble is affected because the north pole of Earth is pushed away by the north pole of Planet X. With magnets, you cannot get their north poles to touch. Planet X is 4 times the diameter of Earth, 23 times its mass, a very large magnet buoy. And when it points its north pole at us, our north pole tips away, causing the 3 days of darkness, because those on the northern hemisphere really can't see much of the sun. It's a light over the horizon. But there's a wobble that has been documented, actually. Go to the ZetaTalk site, check the orbit section, and I've spent some time documenting the reports from around the world on an Earth wobble that is already with us because of this, and it gets more severe going into rotation stoppage. In fact, many crop circles also show this, like a snake writhing back and forth, and then some twisting and turning, and then the snake writhing again. The Earth wobble seems to be something that happens just ahead, getting more and more severe till a point where it's undeniable, and perhaps happening even after the shift as the Earth is reestablishing its rotation, and the planet of the passage, Nibiru, the destroyer, is leaving. Now, the Colburn goes on to describe social disruption that follows the pole shift. Very interesting, because people are always speculating. Are we going to have Mad Max everywhere? Is there going to be law and order anywhere? What's it going to be like? And I quote from the Colburn: "When it passed, men rose up against those in authority and fled from the cities to dwell in tents in the outlands. Egypt lacked great men to deal with the times. The slaves left. Their multitude moved in the gloom of a half-dawn under a mantle of fine, swirling gray ash. The night was a night of terror and dread, for there was a high moaning above, and fire sprang up from the ground. A strange people came up against Egypt, and none stood to fight, for strength and courage were gone. The invaders came up because of the wrath of heaven which had laid their land waste. They enslaved all who were left, the old, young men, and boys. They oppressed the people, and their delight was in mutilation and torture. Pharaoh abandoned his hopes and fled into the wilderness. He lived a goodly life among the sand wanderers and wrote books. Good times came again, even under the invaders, and ships sailed upstream. The air was purified, and the land became filled again with growing things." End of the quote from the Colburn, page 641 and following, on the Exodus. What we hear here is that, as the Zetas have said, everyone who survives the pole shift thinks good times must be over the next hill. Somewhere things are better because they're so awful here. There's no rescue, no one coming to rescue them, so they start wandering and migrating. Everybody is migrating. And in a land such as Egypt that was wealthy, where there were the Pharaoh had stores of grain and the like, they found someplace they wanted to stay. I have often said that it's not so much the little guy, you know, in modest housing with a family garden who's going to be invaded by wandering gangs. It's going to be the enclaves of the wealthy, the well-off. If I were a Mad Max gang, where would I head? I would go where I can expect a well-stocked liquor bar, you know, freezer, whatever, big house, pool, and lots of toys. And that's where I would go. But these bunkers will not fare as expected, per the Zetas. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Ultimate Lot: "They will find they cannot escape to their enclaves as expected, but will be trapped with the populace by mechanical or other problems. They will find that their secrets, their locations, the whereabouts of their supplies are divulged due to careless and distracted employees or angry employees. They will find that the mercenaries they have hired and presume will have control over will turn a surly eye upon them well before the shift and may take their transportation to their safe enclaves away from them well before the shift. Such will be the comeuppance they will receive from the thugs they have employed. They will find nothing they have planned working as expected, and this will be their lot, and a perfect karma it is." This is a quote from Zeta Talk, Ultimate Lot, written February 8, 2003. The Exodus is also described in the Bible, in the Book of Exodus, and paralleled very closely by an Egyptian papyrus written at the same time. They are remarkably similar in their descriptions and the sequence of events they are describing. What does Zeta Talk say about the Exodus? I quote from Zeta Talk, The Jewish Exodus: The last passage of Planet X is best remembered as the time of the Jewish exodus from Egypt, but what is not well known is the reason for the exodus. Slaves do not just walk away from their masters, and in particular a large group of slaves, old women and children among them, do not get miles away from their masters in a desert area where lookouts can see for miles. The institution of slavery is maintained by cruelty and punishment. The slaves attempting to escape are punished in a manner that will serve as a lesson to others contemplating such an escape attempt. Hands and feet are chopped off when the slave wanders or reaches where they are not to go. Eyes poked out when the slave looks when they are supposed to drop their eyes, and tongues cut out when the speech of the slave is considered too bold. Thus, the Jewish exodus did not occur because this large group just decided to take a stroll one day, anticipating nothing worse than a whipping as the comeuppance should they be discovered. The exodus occurred because their masters were devastated and distracted by problems so severe as to take their minds entirely off their slaves. Would this have been a flooded Nile, or a plague of locusts, or even a celebration where all got drunk? Nothing in the normal course of Egyptian society would have created a situation where the Jews could have left en masse, or even a situation where they all could have had the courage to leave. They left because the passage of Planet X imposed first a long night and then horrendous earthquakes and volcanic eruptions in nearby volcanoes. Chaos reigned, the very type of chaos that governments throughout the world fear lies in their near future. Guards left their posts, and household servants stole from their masters and crept away in the seemingly never-ending night. The rulers held their heads in worry and discussed among themselves how they might placate the gods. The military elite, used to utter control and tolerating no challenges to their orders, reacted to chaos by trying to reestablish order. Hysterical troops, unable to comprehend what was happening to them, were in no mood to placate their superiors, and thus the military was engaged with internal battles for some time. It was not until the rotation of the earth was reestablished that the Egyptian rulers and their military leaders were able to regain control of the troops. By that time, as history well tells, the Jewish exodus was a success. And this is the end of the quote from Zeta Talk, The Jewish Exodus, written November 15, 1996. Now note that I did not have my hands on the Colburn until just this past year, 2005. Yet there's a lot of parallels between what the Zetas are describing and facts that we've learned from the Colburn. One thing the Colburn mentions, although I haven't quoted it, is that Moses was able to predict many things that were about to happen, and thus the Pharaoh was rattled by this and felt somehow that the slaves had a better God because they were getting better intel. Now, of course, the intel that Moses was getting was because he was a contactee. He was talking to benign aliens who were giving him this information, just as today many contactees just have a sense that they should move away from the coastlines, or when they should move, or what is about to beset them, and getting this information as individuals, even before they're aware of it, by researching on the web or reading books. So, interesting parallels between the Colburn and Zeta Talk. The Colburn also talks about what to expect for our forthcoming pole shift, the passage of Planet X pending. On page 637, they talk about omens in the skies. Again, constellations not where they should be. This is something that Zeta Talk has emphasized, saying that in December of 2003, Earth stopped in her orbit, and therefore the night sky up above, like the view that a fly sitting on a man's hat who is moving about the room, seems to be similar but not quite right for the seasons. This is because we're stuck, basically, in the December position and being pushed back into the fall position as Planet X moves forward in a straight line, coming away from the sun to pass over our head and leave the solar system. Of course, this is after it has devastated the Earth in yet another pole shift. The Colburn describes these last days as difficult to discern because the approach of Planet X, shrouded by this dust cloud so that it's only a fuzz ball in the vicinity of the sun, and all the light from the sun bouncing back toward the sun, it's like looking into a fog bank. We really cannot see Planet X, the corpus, the way we can see Venus as a morning and evening star with the light shining off a surface not shrouded by dust. They describe the approach of Planet X as stealthy, like a thief in the night. Then they describe red light, red dust turning the water's blood red, days of darkness, tail debris falling to earth, then a pole shift with volcanic gloom, and a lot of volcanic dust afterwards, described as the gray dew of death. I quote the Colburn. Men forget the day of the destroyer. Only the wise know where it went and that it will return in its appointed hour. It raged across the heavens in the days of wrath, and this was its likeness. It was like a billowing cloud of smoke enwrapped in a ruddy glow, not distinguishable in joint or limb. Its mouth was an abyss from which came flame, smoke, and hot cinders. When ages pass, certain laws operate upon the stars in the heavens. Their ways change. There is movement and restlessness. They are no longer constant, and a great light appears redly in the skies. When blood drops upon the earth, the destroyer will appear, and mountains will open up and belch forth fire and ashes. Trees will be destroyed, and all living things engulfed. Waters will be swallowed up by the land, and seas will boil. The heavens will burn brightly and redly. There will be a copper hue over the face of the land, followed by a day of darkness. A new moon will appear and break up and fall. The people will scatter in madness. They will hear the trumpet and battle cry of the destroyer and will seek refuge within dens in the earth. Terror will eat away their hearts, and their courage will flow like water from a broken pitcher. They will be eaten up in the flames of wrath and consumed by the breath of the destroyer. Thus it was in the days of heavenly wrath, which have gone, and thus it will be in the days of doom when it comes again. The times of its coming and going are known unto the wise. There are the signs and times which shall precede the destroyer's return. They will be in the heavens, tremble, and the earth move. Men will quake in fear, and while terror walks among them, the heralds of doom will appear. They will come softly, as thieves to the tombs. Men will not know them for what they are. Men will be deceived. The hour of the destroyer is at hand. The dauntless ones will survive. The stout-hearted will not go down in destruction. There will be a great body of fire, the glowing head with many mouths and eyes ever-changing. Terrible teeth will be seen in formless mouths, and a fearful dark belly will glow redly from skies and fires inside. Even the stout-hearted man will tremble, and his bowels will be loosened, for this is not a thing understandable to men. It will be a vast sky-spanning form in wrapping earth, burning with many hues within wide-open mouths. These will descend to sweep across the face of the land, engulfing all in the yawning jaws. The fangs will fall out, and lo, they are terror-inspiring things of cold, hardened water. Great boulders will be hurled down upon men, crushing them into red powder. As the great salt waters rise up in its train, and roaring torrents pour upon the land, even the heroes among mortal men will be overcome with madness. The flames going before will devour all the works of men. The waters following will sweep away whatever remains. The dew of death will fall softly as a gray carpet over the cleared land. Men will cry out in their madness, "Save us from the gray dew of death." This is the end of a quote from the Colburn, page 637, about what is to come, our pending pole shift. Sounds pretty grim, but I'm going, ZetaTalk repeatedly states that survival is possible if one plans, and it doesn't require money. The common man, in fact, will survive more readily than the wealthy, and life afterwards will be like it was for our civilized countries 100 years ago, like the Amish live today. We won't have electricity and the like. Survival is possible. And this is because, just look at who's writing the book. We're getting the Colburn after the last pole shift, and we certainly didn't all die out. Note what's mentioned here, madness, insanity, something the Zetas have described will be rift, saying almost 43% of survivals will in some way or another be affected by insanity, losing their minds. So much in their life will have changed. Such a sense of helplessness, not being able to control events, a sense of anger. Why was the government knew? Why didn't they tell us? For instance, if the church knew, why didn't they tell us? All that anger, and the sense of loss of loved ones disappearing or dying from disease or injury or starvation. Sense of guilt for not doing better to save those loved ones that you felt responsible for. All these are factors that play to madness. There's a lot of mention about fire running along the ground and the like. The Zetas have actually stated that there's hydrocarbons that are formed by elements in the tail of this planet, which at this time during the passage is pointed toward Earth. That's what gives that writhing dragon-like appearance, that the tail is writhing around, carried by the magnetic interplay between Earth and Planet X as it passes. Caught in the magnetic fields coming out of Planet X as it's making a close passage. So these hydrocarbons pass over volcanoes, which are very hot, you know, form hydrocarbons which fall on the ground, and in fact, Zetatalk states this is where oil comes from. It drains down into cavities underground, and the origin of oil is not from compressed dead dinosaurs, but from these passages. So, if we have something coming down that catches a fire because it's passed over a volcano, this is a wall of fire, and this has been described in mythology, the West Coast Indians, for instance, describing these sheets of fire falling and burning everything beneath. And the Zetas have said, to survive this, dig a trench. The Zetas have offered advice on safety measures, and I quote, "The cataclysms present those who would survive with several challenges, hailstones, firestorms with brief periods of oxygen depletion, earthquakes of a magnitude mankind has never experienced, rapid mountain building, spewing volcanoes, winds of hurricane force, and tidal waves high enough to sweep over tall buildings. What to do?" Regarding tidal waves, practically speaking, to take no chances, one should calculate to a height of 200 feet and be at least 100 miles away from any shore. Regarding volcanoes, volcanoes, old and new, will present those living nearby with sudden activity during the cataclysms, with little warning, for man, being in the center of large land plates, is a safety factor. For man, staying away from the edges of plates where very molten lava can seep and explode during pressure of plate movements is a significant safety factor. Regarding mountain building, remove yourselves from areas where mountain building is likely to occur. Flat plains or plateaus are safest. Regarding earthquakes, the earthquakes will essentially level all cities, and of course railways, landing strips, and highways and bridges will be unusable. Don't figure on any power or water systems to be functional, and the telephones will surely be permanently dead. Batteries may be handy, but won't last long, and will not be replaceable. Your mechanical and electrical structures will suffer damage from violent earthquakes more than your flesh and bones. You may bruise and break, but you will heal. Your electrical devices will stay broken. When the earthquakes are expected, lie flat. In this way, you will skid and slide a few feet. Standing or positioned at a height, you will be dashed. And by all means, do not be under a structure that will fall upon and crush you. Regarding hailstone and firestorms, metal roofs will deflect the firestorms and hailstones also, if sufficiently thick. The thickness of a protective metal plate is not as important as simply being metal, not bursting into flame. Thin metal can bend and crumble under pressure, where thick metal might shear or snap, having less flexibility. Where the metal is deemed to be protective from falling ash and rocks from exploding volcanoes, the thicker the better. For large meteors, which are few, there is no safety measure that can be taken. And this is a quote from Zeta Talk, Safety Measures, written on August 15, 1995. So where are we today in the omens in the sky and the red dust that are described in the Colburn for both the flood and the Exodus and in prophecy preparing us for what is to come? Since December 2003, we've had the constellations not where they should be, offset by several degrees and too high in the dome, the sun too high in the dome as it passes overhead. So we have a documented earth wobble also since 2004. So the signs in the skies are there. What about the moon's orbit? The moon has been tracking to the extreme south after the full moon and to the extreme north after the new moon. Since spring of 2004, this has been noted and documented. Excellent documentation in the orbit section of Zeta Talk regarding that. So the moon is not tracking correctly, and many people have described it moving too swiftly across the sky. Well, the earth wobble does that. We are moving under the moon, and therefore that's a swift passage, apparently, of the moon during certain times when the North Pole is pushed away or bounces back, depending on how the earth is presenting itself to Planet X as it stands between us and the sun. We also have a slight red dust, dusting. Noted our sunsets and sunrises are more reddish. We're told this is all coming from the Sahara as it wraps up into Europe or travels across the Atlantic to affect the United States. But did we really have these reports of all this red dust prior to 2003? I don't believe so. People have found rust particles. Even here in Wisconsin, where I'm located, I found the cat's water full of those rust-red particles, and when I went out to take a check, I thought one of the cats had injured its paw and put its paw in the water because it looked like blood, or very reddish, very pinkish, and nothing in the sky that I could see. So where is this coming from? We are having a light red dusting, but this is not the heavy red dusting that is turning rivers and ponds and lakes blood red in the last few days. It's very early signs, but I would certainly say the signs that set Noah to building his ark are with us today. Just when the destroyer will be visible and as a writhing ball of fire and the like, and the rivers turning blood red, and the 3 days of darkness ensuing, nobody knows. That concludes our broadcast. Thank you for being with us. Remember to carry love in your heart. It's the commodity of the future. As the Zetas say, love may have a blooming going into the shift, as it ought. Those with great love in their hearts responding to the realization that little else matters.
Been listening to a blog in broadcasting service, a service to others' endeavor. Thank you very much, and good night.